Welcome to the Employment Law and HR Podcast with your host, Allison Cauley.
Hello and welcome to this episode number 20 of the Employment Law and HR Podcast. My name is Allison Cauley and I'm a solicitor and HR employment law specialist. I run my own business called Real Employment Law Advice. And the purpose of this podcast is to bring you easy to understand, quick updates on employment law and changes to HR best practice. It's aimed predominantly at small business owners, managers and HR professionals, but obviously it's open to anyone to listen. So thanks very much for tuning in. The way that the podcast works is that I normally have a featured segment where I tell you about a particular area of law or a change in the law or a particular case, and then I go on to tell you my HR best practice tip. If you're listening to the podcast and you want further information about employment law or more regular updates, you can sign up for my newsletter at adviceforemployers.co.uk. On there you'll find a link to sign up and I will send you my fortnightly newsletter that covers a couple of areas of law that I don't normally cover in the podcast or that I don't have time to cover in the podcast. And there are also a number of articles on my website, adviceforemployers.co.uk, where you can find all kinds of information about other areas of law. So I'm going to get into the featured segment. Okay, this week's featured segment is going to be about the right to be accompanied at meetings. And the reason I'm covering this is because I was contacted by one of the podcast listeners, who is actually a trade union rep, and he asked for this to be covered given a recent change to the ACAS code of practice in relation to disciplinary and grievance procedures, and also following a case that took place in the Employment Appeal Tribunal last year. The purpose of the feature segment today is just to give you an overview about the right to be accompanied at meetings, so that's the right for employees to be accompanied, and the changes that have taken place recently, and what you need to know as an employer. So, what is the right to be accompanied? Well, employees have the right set out in, it's actually Section 10 of the Employment Relations Act 1999, to be accompanied at a disciplinary or grievance meeting by a trade union rep or a fellow employee or worker. Now that's a right that's been set out for a number of years, and essentially what it means is that an employee can have somebody go with them to the meeting of their choosing. Now if an employer refuses to allow an employee to be accompanied at a disciplinary or grievance meeting, then the employee can make an application to the Employment Tribunal and can receive up to 2 weeks' pay. That's capped at what is set out as the statutory maximum week's pay, which changes each year, which since the 6th of April has been £475. So it's not a huge amount of compensation, you have to say, just for the right to be accompanied. So if they just had a claim in the Employment Tribunal for the right to be accompanied, then it would be 2 weeks' pay. What I would say in relation to the right to be accompanied is that although the compensation for refusing somebody to be accompanied is only 2 weeks, it can have an effect on the fairness of the decision. So a breach of the ACAS code of practice can be considered by the Employment Tribunal when they're deciding if somebody has been fairly dismissed or not. And if you breach the ACAS code of practice, then any compensation for unfair dismissal can be uplifted by up to 25%. So it's always worth keeping in mind those statutory legal rights to be accompanied at meetings. And then if you refuse somebody to be accompanied or fail to follow the procedure in relation to grievances, then that could give the employee grounds to resign and claim constructive unfair dismissal. So they could rely on your behaviour, allege that it's a breach of contract, a breach of your obligation to them, and claim constructive unfair dismissal. So it is something to be considered and not to be dismissed too quickly. If you're in any doubt, you should get some advice, of course. The case that I'm going to talk about is one called Toal, T-O-A-L, and GB Oils Limited. Now, we'll put a link in the show notes, which you can find at adviceforemployers.co.uk/podcast/20, so you can have a look at the case yourself if you want to. Now, this case was one that was heard in the Employment Appeal Tribunal, and essentially what happened was the employees in this case, Mr. Toll and Mr. Hughes raised grievances with their employer, GB Oils Limited, and they made it clear in that they wanted to be accompanied at their grievance meetings by a gentleman named Mr. Lean. He was an official from Unite Union, and both Mr. Toll and Mr. Hughes were members of the union. The employer, GB Oils, refused their request to be accompanied by Mr. Lean, and instead they were accompanied by a fellow worker, somebody else. And then when they appealed against the outcome of the meetings, the grievance meetings, they were this time accompanied by another union official. So the first meeting, it was a co-worker, and the second one, they were able to have a union official with them. What the employees did in this case was they brought claims against the employer, GB Oils, for a breach of their right to be accompanied. What they argued was that they had an absolute right to choose their choice of companion as long as they met the criteria set out in Section 10 of the Employment Relations Act. So that was a fellow worker or a trade union rep. That was their argument. Now, GB Oils argued what has actually been considered to be the position, I have to say, for several years, in that they said that the employee had a right to be accompanied and to make a reasonable request. So GB Oils were saying, well, a reasonable request means that if we consider that their choice of companion is unreasonable, then we can refuse to have that companion and make them essentially choose somebody else. So they didn't prevent them from being accompanied full stop, they just prevented them from being accompanied by their choice of companion, which was their union rep in this case. The ACAS Code of Practice at the time supported the argument from GB Oils, and the previous Code of Practice actually stated that in the guidance that it would not normally be reasonable for workers to insist on being accompanied by a companion whose presence would prejudice the hearing, nor would it be reasonable for a worker to ask to be accompanied by a companion from a remote geographical location if someone suitable and willing was available on site. So that kind of said to employers, and in fact, you know, I would advise employers of the same thing, that if there were a particular strong reason why it wouldn't be reasonable for their particular choice of companion, then they could insist that they have somebody else. What the Employment Appeal Tribunal decided in this case was they decided in favour of the employees, and they said that it was an absolute right for the employees to choose their companion as long as they met that criteria. So the employer could not refuse, for instance, a trade union rep or a fellow colleague. Interestingly, the Employment Appeal Tribunal didn't make any decision about compensation for the employees and return the case to the tribunal, but they did say that the tribunal might feel compelled to reduce or minimise compensation to the employees in this case because they actually hadn't had any detriment because they were accompanied by somebody anyway. Following that case, what's actually happened is ACAS have decided to change their disciplinary and grievance procedure code of practice in line with the decision of the Employment Appeal Tribunal in this case. So what the code of practice now says is that workers have a statutory right to be accompanied by a companion where the disciplinary meeting could result in a formal warning being issued or the taking of some other disciplinary action or the confirmation of a warning or some other disciplinary action. And the statutory right is to be accompanied by a fellow worker, a trade union rep, or an official employed by a trade union. And it says that employers must agree to a worker's request to be accompanied by any companion from one of these categories. Workers may also alter their choice of companion if they wish. As a matter of good practice, if making their choice, workers should bear in mind the practicalities of the arrangements. For instance, a worker may choose to be accompanied by a companion who is suitable, willing, and available on site rather than someone from a geographical remote location. So that's something for the employees to bear in mind. But actually, I would not advise an employer to refuse somebody's choice of companion merely on that basis, because of the case and the recent change to the guidance. In terms of the practicalities of having the companion attend, if for any reason the companion isn't available at the time of the meeting, then the employee can make a suggestion for another date and the employer is obliged to rearrange within 5 working days. And the companion has the right to have their time off of work paid to attend the meeting during working hours, and they have the right not to suffer a detriment or dismissal as a result of acting as a companion. So just to summarise, the outcome of the case in Toll and GB Oils, which went to the Employment Appeal Tribunal, is that there's been a change to the code of practice in the ACAS Code of Practice on Disciplinary and Grievance Procedures, so that it makes it clear that there is now an absolute right for an employee to be accompanied by either a trade union representative, an official employed by a trade union, or a fellow worker. Now, I'm often asked by employers about employees being accompanied by a member of their family or by a legal representative, for instance. Now, there is no legal right to have a representative that is not one of those three categories of people, but it is at an employer's discretion to make that change, to allow an employee to be accompanied by a member of their family. I quite often will ask what the situation is, and in many cases, there isn't any real reason for refusing an employee to be accompanied by a member of their family. And unless you think that that's going to cause some difficulty operationally, or there's some issues about confidentiality, etc. One situation where you will often find that it is a request made is where somebody is suffering from a disability, for instance. So they will want to be accompanied by somebody who is more suitable to assist them at their meeting than maybe a colleague would be. It's always advisable to seek some specific advice about that situation, as it might be a reasonable adjustment that the employee could argue is required to mitigate the effect of their disability. And in some circumstances, an employee might be able to argue under the Human Rights Act that they have the right to a fair trial and therefore to be accompanied by a legal rep. And there have been a few cases in the past involving doctors who have been faced with career-ending disciplinary action, who have successfully argued that they had the right to be accompanied by a legal rep. But generally, solicitors, barristers and other lawyers aren't allowed, or generally employers don't like them to be at the meetings for obvious reasons. And then finally, I just want to add that the right to be accompanied at disciplinary meetings and grievance meetings is actually where there is going to be some disciplinary action. There isn't a right to be accompanied at an investigatory meeting. There's no legal right. Obviously, you can have something in your own contracts and procedures that requires an employee to be accompanied or to allow them to be accompanied. And you might also want to consider that as an adjustment if you're requested. It's at your discretion as to whether you allow somebody to come along with an employee at an investigation stage. So the right to be accompanied. If you find yourself in any difficulty in this area, then do please drop me an email. It's alison@realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk, and I'd be happy to offer you some further advice and assistance. Now, my HR best practice tip of the week is actually in relation to contracts and procedures. I know I've been banging on about this before, but it's something that comes up all the time. And just recently, I've had, within the space of a week, I'm advising two employers where their terms and conditions in their handbooks are contractual and they're not up to scratch. So it means that the employees can rely on those terms, and the terms are actually really vague. So it's quite hard to pick apart what the true intention of those terms is and the application to the particular circumstances. And I've also found that there have been some rather woolly clauses added to employment handbooks about things like sick pay and holiday pay. Again, it's just not good when something goes wrong. So you might think to yourself, you know, well, we don't have any problems here. We've got a handbook in place. Nobody really looks at it. It doesn't really matter. Actually, it does. It's really important to do it now before you get a problem, rather than be faced with the situation that a couple of people who I've been advising are in, where problems are arising and we're faced with trying to unravel the mess of the handbook and contractual terms at a time when really we want to be concentrating on other issues. So my HR best practice tip is, as always, make sure that your handbook is not contractual and that your terms in any documents that you have that are contractual are fit for purpose. Thank you very much for listening to this episode 20 of the podcast. I hope that you found it useful. If you want to check out the show notes, you can find them at adviceforemployers.co.uk/podcast/20. And if you are enjoying the podcast, please do send me an email, or if you've got any suggestions. This episode was put together on the basis of a suggestion that I received via email from a listener. So I'm really happy to receive those and to know that you're listening. And if you do like the content and you're on iTunes, then please leave me a review in iTunes. It's really easy to do. Just follow the steps, leave a 5-star review if that's what you think it's worth, and add some comments in there. It really makes it worthwhile for me. Thanks very much for listening and have a great week. Thanks again for listening. Just want to finalise by saying I wouldn't be a lawyer unless I had a legal disclaimer. So I must just say to you that the information in this podcast is for information only. It's general review and a general update. It's always necessary to get specific legal advice about your circumstances. So please don't rely on anything that you've heard in this podcast. But please do feel free to contact me if you'd like further information or specific advice.